You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Orla Shinoui.
Hello, Richard.
Hello, Orla. And we've got two special guests this month for the cycling podcast Femina. No, you are special. Don't look like that. It's Tom Varney.
Hello.
Tom, you can introduce yourself properly, but you run the Drop cycling team with your father, Bob, who is also with us.
Hello, everybody.
And Bob, you've been with us before, but you insisted that Tom was actually knew far more than you about the mechanics of running the team and so on. So
I'm convinced of it, Richard.
Yeah.
He let you out of the office,
chained to the desk. So we're going to hear from you about your second year and your plans for next year. It's all change again, I think, for next year, or certainly a few changes. But yeah, we'll hear from you about recent races. You've been in action a couple big races recently, and we've got a lot to cover as ever, haven't we, Orla?
Yeah, as ever. Yeah, plenty of racing since we last met, and all of that really laying the groundwork for us to look ahead to the World Championships and see who's in form, who might shine there. And we've got quite a good interview in the middle of the episode this month as well, don't we?
That's the interview that you conducted, Orla.
Yeah, well, that's why it was quite good.
Yeah.
If you had done it, it would be very
really
good.
Really good. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, as you say, a lot of racing since the last time. Plouay we had up in Brittany. Lizzie Dagenham won that ahead of Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, her best result for quite a while.
Well, her first World Tour win this year.
For Lizzie Dagenham?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Tour of Yorkshire, not a World Tour
It was
race.
An absolutely outstanding win, to be fair.
Tour of Yorkshire wasn't a World Tour event then, no.
No,
just to clarify. It was an outstanding win, Bob.
Yeah, we were there. I actually wasn't working then. I was actually there watching and entertaining.
Signing riders.
No, I was actually helping to promote recycling with one of our sponsors, Every Can Counts, and their French operation.
We're like 2 minutes and six into the podcast, and there's the first mention of a sponsor.
Sorry it was so long.
What a pro.
They brought their recycling game over to Plouay, and we were there entertaining Rick Hindley and his French colleagues. But so we got to see quite a bit of the racing without any pressure from the team car, and Lizzie was absolutely amazing, as were Bowles Dolmans. They absolutely dominated. It was a really, really imperious win.
And it looked, and I think Mark Cavendish tweeted it at the time, that she was right back on song and potentially would be a favourite for the World Championship. She's since had her appendix out, hasn't she?
She has indeed, yeah.
Lizzie Dagenham had an appendix operation. I think that came on her very suddenly after Plouay, and that put her World Championships in doubt, although she has been named in the British team. So looks like she'll be okay for that. After Plouay, we had the Bowles Dolmans Tour, six-stage race. Annemiek van Vleuten won, well, she won the prologue in stage three. Kristen Wild won stage one. Lisa Brenner, stage four. Anna van der Breggen, stage five. Yannick Enzing, stage six. And Annemiek van Vleuten was the overall winner. It was a Dutch 1-2-3. Van der Breggen second and Ellen van Dijk third.
And that one stage for van der Breggen secured her the purple jersey, because if she hadn't got that, there were just 27 points in it, I think.
The purple jersey being
the Women's World Tour champion jersey, leader's jersey. So it was a great final race for those two, really, wasn't it, between the compatriots. And Annemiek van Vleuten, such an amazing season, could have finished it, well, it's not finished yet, obviously she could still finish it on a huge high, but could have finished it with a purple jersey. But Anna van der Breggen,
could be some interesting team dynamics in the Dutch
very,
team
very
at the World Championships,
yeah.
But we'll get on to that later on. Lotto Belgium Tour was next. Anouska Koster of WM3 team, that's Marion Vos's team, won the third stage, and the overall Marion Vos won a stage there. Your Abby May Parkinson was 13th there.
Yeah, we had a really good few days in Belgium. We started our preparation for next year's Classics, to be fair, and we took a young team. Abby May was our leader for the first time. She's had a standout year for us this year. So, we changed things around a bit just for the last two races. And, it was a great experience.
And then we were on to the Madrid Challenge, which you also took a team to. We'll hear a little bit about your thoughts on the Madrid Challenge later. It was won by Yolene Duhr. Corinne Rivera, who's obviously had a great season for Sunweb, was second. Roxanne Fournier was third. We had Fran Reyes there, who was with us throughout the Vuelta on the podcast, Spanish journalist. And Fran had his microphone and recorder with him, and he watched the Madrid Challenge and spoke to a few of the riders at the finish. Corinne Rivera, Sheila Gutierrez, the Spanish rider who was fifth, and Elisa Longo-Borghini, the Wiggle High Five rider whose teammate Jolien Duhr won the race. So let's hear from them now. I think we hear first from Con Rivera, then from Sheila Gutierrez, and then from Elisa Longo-Borghini.
So here we are, the backstage of the podium of the La Challenge by La Vuelta a España with Corin Rivera, Sunweb rider who was second today. First question, a difficult one. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's sunny out and it was a good day, so I can't complain.
How was the final sprint? Because we saw Sunweb putting quite great work on the front, yet came so close to the victory.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of sprinting. It takes a full team and a full team effort and a lot of luck too. So I think we dotted all our I's and crossed all our T's, and I think we definitely executed the plan. But yeah, it came down to a bit of luck and timing at the end. But I think, you know, we can still be really happy with how the race went because we did everything we said we were going to do, except for a bit of luck with me at the end in the sprint. So
talking about the Bergen Worlds, how do you expect that race to play out?
I think it'll be a really good race. I think there's really good countries that have really good teams, and I think also the U.S., we are sending a really strong team also, and I think we showed last week that we're a strong team and we can race together as a team. Yeah, I think we have a pretty good opportunity to do well in a couple weeks.
How do you rate your options to become world champion there?
I think with a championship race, a lot of it has to do with luck, I think. Just how the day turns out, you know, a lot of bad things can happen and a lot of good things can happen, and I think it's just a matter of putting the team in the best situation as possible.
So, here we are with Sheila Gutierrez, Spanish rider, Spanish national champion, racing now for Scandinavian Silence Pro Cycling. After 2 years in the Women World Tour, you seem to be already an established rider. Are you finally adapted to the hard racing up there?
Maybe physically sometimes, but mentally still not, because still I don't believe I'm in that level. But yeah, constantly I seem that I'm in front of, in the races, and I have a good season, and I'm really keen to race the last World Tour race. This year, I seem like I said, I'm fighting for a top 10 in some races, and I hope I can keep this level or even increase it in the few next years. I hope I can have the same or more success. It's not easy, even more in this sport, because, you know, it's hard just only to have the shape. Also, you need to have the courage and also the good look sometimes.
Courage, yeah, that's something you are pretty good at. But yeah, finally, on this note, give me an introduction of yourself for our listeners. What kind of rider is Sheila Gutierrez?
I think I'm a fighter, and I'm not the best climber, either the best sprinter. I like the technical races and yeah, the fast ones.
Being in Spain and you being the top Spanish rider, I would like to hear your assessment, your opinion on the state of Spanish cycling nowadays.
Yeah, I think I find a lot of good riders with a good level. I think there is improvement a lot in the last years, because we can see in the Spanish Cup that is being more speed, more riders, more fight. And I think they are good riders, but they still miss maybe more races in the World Tour or in the international races. But I hope they can have also the chance next year to race more.
We are seeing that La Challenge apparently has plans to become a 3-day race. That would be a great step forward.
Yeah, it would be really nice. It's also already good that we have this day, but for us it's like, it's supposed to be the most important race in the year, but for the men's it's just only the holiday day. So I think it's not fair, and like the Tour did this year with La Course in Issoar, I think they also can do something like this.
Movistar women team, is that good news?
Yeah, it's a really good news. It means that some riders could have the chance to race outside in the best level and with the best environment and the best professional team, I think. And this is really nice and something to thankful Movistar, Unzua, and the people are behind the project.
here we are with Elis Halongo-Borghini. How has it gone for you?
It was a quick day. It was quite easy because we had to work for Yulin, and I came here pretty relaxed. This course is very fast and not technical, so the sprint was quite predictable.
What about the walls? What are your intentions for this race?
Normally, I would like to be there in good shape. I found myself pretty tired. I think it's also normal after a season like this. It's been very busy, but I'm going there just to enjoy the race. And I want to be there, and I want to just enjoy it and be with the first ones.
Which other options do you identify within the Italian national team for this world?
I think we have more than one option, because I'm not the only one who's strong in the team. And Giorgia is very fast, and she's climbing pretty well. So if there will be a bunch of 10, 15, as I predict there will be, Giorgia will be for sure there, and then the sprint is for her.
Why has there been this, so to say, mediocre participation at this race? Because I see that many of the world top teams haven't been here. Many teams have come with short lineups.
Yeah, what can I say? For sure, it's nice to have the broadcast live and to have the event next to La Vuelta. But what can you see from this race? Like, we are used to race 150Ks with hard courses, and here it's like a kermis race. For me, as I said, for the previous event in La Course, and also for La Course event from this year, it's nice, it's very good, but we need actual races. We girls are not, we don't race these races. It's 87 kilometers, it's flat. A race like this would be nice in a stage race. Just give us the opportunity to go to the top of the Angliru after 130Ks and with an actual race. There you will see many girls going, a lot of team participating, and the day after, just do this crit. For sure, the teams will be enthusiastic and will be keen to come to Madrid. It's 2 days of traveling for the teams, and some of them probably skipped this one for this also. It's nice that they try to put on an event, but it's not a circus. For us, it's a work. Some of the other girls just went on training, and they could get the same quality instead of coming here and race.
So we heard there from Corinne Rivera, Sheila Gutierrez, and Elisa Longo-Borghini. I mean, very interesting stuff from Longo-Borghini at the end there. Gutierrez mentioned the new Movistar team. That was a rare podcast exclusive at the Vuelta, thanks to our Spanish colleague, Bran Reyes, who brought his A-game to the podcast.
That was very good.
And revealed exclusively that Movistar
Strong
are launching a women's team. Well, he wasn't sure whether it was 2018 or 2019. They've been working on this for a while. They've got a manager in place. I think they've had problems signing riders, but they are launching next year. That's obviously a great development. We'll hear a little bit from Bob and Tom, their reflections on that in a moment perhaps. But on Longo-Borghini's comments about the Vuelta, we spoke during the Vuelta to Javier Guillen, the director of the Vuelta, and he told us a little bit about his ambitions for the race. Here's what he said.
On the final day of the Vuelta, we'll have the Madrid Challenge, the women's race. We've heard this week that Movistar are launching a women's team. Women's sport seems to be growing a lot. Would you like to develop the women's race here?
Yes, I'd like to. If at the end Movistar is launching a women's team, I think it's a great news, because our responsibility is to help all cycling or road cycling in all terms of matters. For sure, we would like to make Madrid Challenge bigger, but I think we have to go slowly, step by step. Madrid Challenge came up because 3 years ago it was our 80th anniversary. So we decided just 1 year. We saw it work very good. Now, you know, it's absolutely established. The race, so now it's time to try to do something more. What that mean? to add 1 or 2 days to the race. No more. I don't see so far another 3 weeks for women, because I think it's too much. It's too tough in terms of logistic, economical terms. So I prefer to go a little bit. But in my model, in my plan, Madrid Challenge is a 3 day race.
So that was Javier Guillen saying that his dream is to build up, develop the Madrid Challenge into a 3 day event. He didn't put a time scale on that. Longo Borghini saying that she would have liked, a bit like La Course at Tour de France, for it to have been at least a 2 day event with the stage up the Angleroo on the Saturday and then the race in Madrid on the Sunday. I mean, the race, it was graced by drops, so you couldn't certainly say that it was a poor field, but there were a lot of big teams missing. Canyon-SRAM were missing, WM3 were missing, Cervelo Bigla were missing. Who else? Bulls Dolmans. How could I forget Bulls Dolmans? Yeah, so a lot of big teams and big names missing from the race, which is disappointing, I guess.
Well, probably quite a good thing, really, that they were missing, in the sense that the organisers will then know, you're looking at me aghast, but if teams aren't happy with the style of the racing, then so much the better to make that felt with a lack of presence, because maybe then they will know that if riders and teams are going to vote with their plane tickets and decide to stay at training camps instead or go to other races, that they'll have to provide decent racing in future. And just having a stage at the Vuelta a España is not enough, and certainly one that is so short and so flat. When we saw La Course, at least the 67 kilometres were uphill, and yeah, that was a fantastic race.
An important point, which I neglected to mention, is that it is the final event in the Women's World Tour, and by that alone, I think the intention is to make it a real kind of showpiece, showcase event for women's cycling. But the winner of the Women's World Tour doesn't even go and take part in the final
neither
event.
Neither did number two. Annemiek van Vleuten wasn't there either, because the standings have been decided. So the race wasn't good enough of itself. They decided to be contested.
Let's let Bob react to that, because I can see he's thinking lots of thoughts.
It's good and bad, isn't there, really? It was actually a really good race in a very nice environment, and it was live on Eurosport. So there are good things to be taken from it. But you're quite right in everything you've said. Logistically, it was very challenging, especially for us as a small team on a small budget. There were two other stage races in the Giro de Toscana and the Lotto Belgian Tour. We were in the Lotto Belgian Tour, and we had to, you know, get all of our bikes and our people down there, which wasn't easy. But we were blessed with live TV. It was warm, it was sunny. The course was a commess, as obviously La Course has been up until this year. So from small acorns, there needs to be development. If people see development and progress, then that's kind of okay. If they don't see that, then I think they get frustrated. I can understand the bigger teams not being there. Worlds are coming up, and it was a long way to go for a weekend, you know, training camps, team time trial camps, you know, in sort of preparation for next weekend. You know, I can understand all of those things. So yeah, it's like everything in life, there's, you know, it's good and bad, isn't there?
I was just going to go back to the race director's comments then. If it's his dream to have a 3 day race, then in my simple view, it doesn't take much to do that. If he wants to do it, there's no reason why that can't happen next year. And it's the same for the Tour de France. In my opinion, there could be at least in the last 7 stages, the women could have could start the day after the last rest day and continue all the way through. And then it's not a crit, it's not a mountain stage. We can have some stages in between that suit other riders. And I think it's disappointing that those that have the biggest opportunity to make a big change aren't making that change. And I believe it's easy for them to do that as well. So
let's see, because, you know, that was just a couple of weeks ago he said that. I don't think he said it before. Maybe we'll see that next year. I mean, things can happen very quickly. The Movistar team, for example, is not something that's happened quickly, but something that when they found out about recently. I don't know whether, Bob, you'd had wind of this development and what are your thoughts about it? Because it's twofold. One, it's a big new women's team, but also it's a women's team attached to a big men's team.
Yeah, it's a big deal, isn't it? They're the number one team in the world, and they've been the number one men's team in the world for, 4 or 5 years? And they obviously target that. You know, they go after that, and they set that out as their stall for the season. So if they're embracing having a women's team, that can only be a good thing. The practicalities is it's driving up the wages of the riders. We know that personally because we've been trying to sign riders for next year, and I won't know until everyone announces their plans for next year. But I would wager at least two or three riders that we've been talking to may end up at Movistar on higher wages than we're allowed, we're able to offer. Not that we don't want to. We're working hard to raise salaries in women's cycling, as anyone who knows our story knows. But yeah, so it's dragging the whole thing up, and Movistar coming in is a really big deal.
I mean, there are a few, Sunweb have had a great season, men's and women's teams, and they seem like a very integrated setup. We mentioned in the podcast on La Course, you know, it was interesting at La Course to see which men's and women's teams were. You could almost tell from the compound how close the vehicles were parked to each other, how much the riders mixed with each other. I neglected to mention at the time Astana, but they also have a men's and women's team, and they looked pretty close. Orica were pretty close. Sunweb, they're obviously big men's teams without women's teams. What we spoke to Dave Brailsford about that at the Vuelta, and he didn't really directly answer the question, but it seems pretty clear that they don't have plans to set up a women's team. I mean, it's a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, we're going to hear in next month's episode actually an interview with the man behind the Bulls Dolmans teams, who has a very good reason for wanting to run a women's team and not be involved with a men's team.
And it should be said, they're still the number one team in the women's peloton despite all the success of these teams, which are almost female offshoots of the men's side. So I mean, it's not a foregone conclusion, is it, that if a men's team brings on board a women's team, that they will be better necessarily than the others, or better.
No, absolutely
in infrastructure,
not. It's like,
or support.
It's like the races where there's a men's race, but there are some cracking races where there's not a men's race. You know, Vergada in Sweden springs to mind immediately. So I don't think, you know, it follows that it has to be. You know, every male team has to have a female team, and every male race needs a female race as well. So yeah, the Bowles Dolman story is wonderful, and we use it quite a lot because I think anyone knows we're ambitious and we've started from an amateur team. And I know Danny Stam quite well, and I know that he recommended to Lizzie that they should go there, and it was a Dutch club team, and you know, they've come up from nowhere. So what an inspirational story that is, and it's something we certainly aspire to do. It whether we will or not, we'll have to see, but you know, unless you try, you'll never know. So yeah, it doesn't go hand in hand, does it? So Bowles Dolmans, they don't have a guys team. There's no clamour for a guys Bowles Dolmans team, is there? You'd look good in a Bowles Dolman kit, Richard, I think. But, you
know. Orange is
sure.
His colour.
I'm not sure orange is my colour, actually.
I mean, do you welcome that kind of news then? Because, as you say, we don't need a women's peloton that is full of women's versions of the men's team. But is it a good thing for women's cycling, do you think, that Movistar are moving in that direction?
I think in Movistar's case, I think it's important because my limited knowledge of Spanish cycling, I think they definitely need a development program for the female Spanish athletes. But I also agree with Bob, I don't think every male team should be forced to have a women's team. It's good that they're doing it because they want to have a women's team. And we've had the likes of this guy, Durango, and Lointec that have been around for a long time. And from what I know, I think they're still going to, at least one of them will still be around. And it could be give them a platform to go up to the high echelons of Women's World Tour. And I think it's important for Spain as a nation to look towards Sheila Gutierrez and go and kind of use that as a pinnacle to aim towards. So in this instance, I think it's a good thing and that they want to do it and they're putting their efforts into it.
Gutierrez is 23, I think, so she's a young, emerging talent. And although she's contracted silence next year, you'd imagine that she's a sort of rider Movistar would want eventually. I mean, I think the point you make, Tom, is a good one about it's important because it's Spain, which is one of the heartlands of cycling, along with, you know, Belgium, France, Italy. Francis de Geux, of course, launched a women's team this year. But not only that, Movistar is the most traditional team out there. I think it's one of the longest standing teams in the peloton. It goes right back to the 80s, as you know, Reynolds and Banesto. And it certainly, in terms of its management and all the rest of it, always been a very, very traditional team. So for them to take this initiative and do it because, as you say, they obviously want to run a women's team, is a very positive step, I think.
It is, and I don't know if it's going too far to say that to me it feels almost like a bit of a validation of where the women's sport is at the moment. Not that we need the men's peloton for that to happen, but it did make me, you know, have a little bit of a fist pump moment where I thought, well, yes, you know, if teams aren't obliged to do this, then so much the better when they actually do, because it must mean that there's something in it for them, and it's a healthy way to move forward with the sport.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you say you have a fist pump, and it is great news, and it's
good.
She's
always doing that,
but
though.
How boring would it be if the women's peloton mirrored the men's peloton? It would be awful. It would be the worst thing. You know, we want Wiggle High Five. We want Bowles Dolmans. We want to keep that history. You know, we want to keep that. It's part of the sport.
And I guess the danger as well, to a certain extent, is if it crosses over too much, because women's racing is very different. And the women's peloton, in a professional sense, is much newer. And so it has the potential to develop in different ways. It's a different style of racing. We've spoken about this before a little bit, whereby when I spoke to Barry Austin from Canyon SRAM, the DS, and he was saying how women just operate differently psychologically. So they race a different way, and they ride their bikes a different way. And it would be a real shame if that was suppressed in any way, and that they were made to race as if they were in the men's peloton, because that's not how women's racing looks on the road, and that's what makes it so exciting.
It's important that it keeps its own identity, you know, both with the teams and the races.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
We could really get a big boost combining with men's cycling, but at this point in time I have to say that I just don't feel like they're embracing us. There are some guys that are really great, and I'm going to mention him again, Mark Cavendish. I mean, he at least says something, you know. Maybe it's because he has a daughter and he feels somehow connected, but I mean, at least I wrote an opinion piece that went on cycling news last year, and he retweeted it. Great exposure just because he retweeted it, you know. And on the day of the Col d'Isoire, he writes, oh, watching La Course, what do you guys think, who's going to win? Just something like that. It's really big for us, you know, and that's what I just wish the men would realize. It's a little bit like the United Nations push he for she campaign. That's kind of, if the men could put that behind us, the like he behind the she, it would do wonders for our sport. But if they don't do that, then I'm sorry, I feel like just an add-on, someone in the shadow, and then I become a little bit negative, and I think we need to do our own thing.
I kind of find it hard to get my head around, because for me it's cycling. If I'm watching male cycling, female cycling, junior cycling, it's watching cycling. So maybe I got a different perspective.
Because you seemed surprised whenever I said that I wanted to chat to you about it. And I think your reaction was, well, isn't everyone in cycling just interested in women cycling anyway, because it's cycling? So you seem surprised that you stand out in that way, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so, because I just think it's normal. I don't particularly talk about men cycling at home, do you know what I mean? But if I watch a good race, I'll tweet about a good men's race. Likewise, I don't watch much women cycling at home. When I watch a race, I tweet about a good race. For me, it's the same. And it's a generational thing. And unfortunately, as in, we saw the 50th anniversary of it being legal to be homosexual in the UK just this year. If you think that it still took long, that 50 years, for it to be, it's normal in society, you know? It's normal. You don't have to make a conscious decision that it's normal. It's normal. And I think it's just the same with women's sport. Unfortunately, it's where it is. It might just take another few years for it to be that it's not talked as men's and women's cycling. It's the only time that the actual sex will be talked about is in the title of the race, so you know actually what you're watching, like in tennis. Do you know what I mean? But cycling be cycling. Unfortunately, it's not going to help my female colleagues that are riding now, that kind of maybe feel that they don't get treated the same as the men, which is 100%. Like, there's no way that the women's side of sport is treated as an equal to the men's. But it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a while, and as frustrating it'll be, I believe it will happen eventually. And I think the best thing that can happen is that girls and boys that do one change, like, help that next generation. You know, when kind of that demographic of the past generation is kind of phased out, it's easy to go and moan. But all you're doing by moaning, you create yourself as a charity. If you moan that you should have men, then you will just be an add-on event. Instead of maybe getting together, create a union type thing, bring a proposal as to and stand strong together. If it's about empowering women, show that empowerment. Don't push somebody to give you a platform to show that empowerment. Show it. For me, that's the strongest kind of movement you can do to bring equality, I think, across the sport.
Do you think it's just a question of natural progression that we'll get to a stage in a generation, maybe two generations, whereby women maybe will have equal pay, equal status, equal exposure to the men? You think it's something that's going to, you hope at least, evolve fairly organically?
I hope so. Like, I may be completely wrong. I may be completely naive about it, because all I think about is how I think about it, how my children think about it, how my wife thinks about it. Doesn't matter your sex, your race, your sexuality. It's everyone's equal. Everyone's a person, and everyone is entitled to the same. You know, that's what my kids will always grow up with. And if you speak to them, you see it. It's not something they have to learn. It's something that's in them. Like I said again, I may be wrong, but I think it is a general thought process of the majority of the population. And here in the UK, anyway, it's not shown. But when things come up, like the BBC pay gap, for instance, like, it is highlighted, and there is a kickoff, and it's not just females that are kicking off. Like, there's a kickoff across the thing, which is, it does show that there doesn't need to be a fight. Like, it just needs to be highlighted, and then we change it.
So what have you made of the level of women's cycling that you've spotted over the last year or so? Where do you think we are in terms of racing, or have you watched enough of it to know?
Well, I know that, like, my girlfriends that I ride with, like, they're strong, man. You know, I don't think there's a question we can kind of talk about how strong it is. It's a world level. There's a Women's World Cup, which means there's a world level of cycling there. You know, an amateur can't just come in and race there. It's a professional peloton. I think to compare it to the men defeats the kind of object of what we're trying to talk about, in the fact that, you know, there's a professional side of women's sport there. But I enjoy watching it. Like you said, if it's women's race and men's race and junior, I enjoy watching cycling. And if I'm not interested, I'll turn it off, regardless who's there. If it's a mountain day, if it's a sprint day, if I'm not interested, I'll turn it off. If I am interested, I'll watch it. If it's good racing, and you get that from all sides, really.
So we were played in there by, well, we heard initially from Ashley Moolman-Passio, and then the voice was that of Mark Cavendish and Orla Shinawy. But that was Mark Cavendish sort of responding to that comment that Ashley Moolman-Passio made a couple of episodes ago. And of course, we thought it'd be interesting to get his thoughts. We'll react to his thoughts in a moment. But I should say a big thank you to Science and Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina. I remind you, you can get 20% off all your Science and Sport products, the finest nutrition products in the world. ScienceandSport.com, the code is CPAUG20. That will be updated at some point, but CPAUG20 for 20% off everything you want at Science and Sport. So, I say, Ashley Moolman-Passio made that comment about Mark Cavendish, that he was one of the male riders, if not the only one, who appeared to be, publicly at least, genuinely supportive of women's racing. What was interesting, Orla, was, I think, when you went to him and put that to him, he seemed quite bemused that he was even being asked about it.
Yeah, he was. Danny King was another one who had singled him out, and I mentioned Danny and Ashley Moolman-Passio to him when I asked if he would fancy having a chat about it. And bemused is exactly the word to describe his reaction, and it made him a little bit reluctant to come forward and talk about it, because I don't think he necessarily wanted to be any kind of a spokesman for male cyclists being pro women cycling. And also, he was perfectly happy to do it. He didn't take any convincing whatsoever, but he was just a little bit confused, I think. And
just a small payment.
No, not even. He bought Mike Oak. But he, you know, he said, whenever I first said it to him, he said, well, is that not just a generational thing? Are all male cyclists of my age and my generation not just into cycling? And I said, well, they might be, but no one else is vocal about it on Twitter and social media. So he was happy to talk about it, but he was quite nervous when the interview started, because I think he was aware that it could be something that could be scrutinised to an extent, and he didn't want it to be political in any way. And yet, what he said could be interpreted in quite a political manner. But I thought he was brilliantly erudite on the matter and very interesting.
I mean, I think it was a good thing to actually bring it to his attention that Ashley Moolman-Passio had said that, and that she appreciated it, because, as she said, it's such a little thing, and yet it can make a big difference, because these guys have huge followings, and, you know, Cavendish has over a million followers on Twitter, and he can use that voice that he has in quite a positive way, and he does do, and others do in different respects. So I think it's good that you brought it to his attention, although I presume he'd listened to the podcast.
Well, one would presume. But it was also nice because, you know, Cavendish is known for being a bit brash and maybe shooting his mouth off every now and again. Speaking from the heart, I guess, is a nicer way to put it. But he was, even after the interview, he was quite concerned that he'd said it all in the right way and whether he had expressed himself correctly and said everything that he had wanted to say about the matter. So it was clearly something that while he hadn't necessarily given much thought to beforehand, he was keen to get right.
We've just edited it very carefully. No. Listen, I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that, Bob and Tom. You had a listen there to what Mark was saying.
I wholeheartedly agree with him. In my experience, from the last 2 years of being involved in wind cycling, often the male riders I speak to, or even male fans, they find the women's races more exciting. Yeah, they're shorter, which may lend itself to a more aggressive style of racing, but the women, they're not afraid of racing aggressively, and it splits from the back, it doesn't split from the front, and that's one thing in particular that surprised me. I didn't have any exposure to women's cycling before the team, really, only a smaller amount, and that was the biggest thing, is how hard they ride, and constantly, all the time, and it doesn't really let up. So there's a big difference in women's cycling and in men's cycling. It's not really comparable, I don't think, in the style of racing at least. And I think one of the reasons we started the team was because it wasn't because of women's cycling, it wasn't because it was a women's team. We love cycling. We wanted to get involved with cycling, and it quickly became apparent halfway through the first year that these girls deserve more, not only our girls, but all the other teams, the other athletes, whether it's at the top of the sport or those coming into it, and especially the next generation, and those coming through the system in under-14s, under-16s, and they all deserve more. And for it to be a sustainable full-time job, really.
Well, that links nicely to something I was wanting to ask you about, because we were going to talk a little bit more about the racing in part one. I think we hijacked ourselves with chat about Movistar women's team and stuff like that. But the Lotto Belgium Tour is one of the races that you guys done recently. You went there with a young, promising young rider, Abby Mae Parkinson, as your leader. You said something interesting about that before we started recording. Tell us about the decision to go there with her as your leader. I think she's played an important support role this year in other races, hasn't she?
Yeah, a little bit about Abby Mae Parkinson. We was planning on having 4 international riders in our roster this year, and Abby Mae sent her CV through at the end of last season. I interviewed her in a hotel in Qatar prior to the Worlds, and she came over as an incredibly dedicated, passionate, enthusiastic young rider. And I remember ringing Tom from Qatar and said, we need to sign this girl, she needs to take the last spot. So her first race for us was Het Nieuwsblad, and we wanted riders with Alice in the finale.
Alice Barnes,
but yeah. And Abby Mae Parkinson was our last rider with Alice. I forget which climb it was. They wouldn't let the team cars go up, and we were shunted around the side, so we could see the race come over the top, and Abby Mae Parkinson was just behind Alice. And that was the last weekend in February. And she's been outstanding the whole way through. She was really supportive in the OVO Women's Tour. Yeah, so really we decided that the last 2 races of the season, I know it's a bit controversial with changing teams and UCI points, etc., but we took a younger development team to our last 2 races, and Abby Mae was leader for the Lotto Belgian Tour. And she was outstanding and had a really good race.
I mean, it's interesting because in some respects that support role is easier, certainly psychologically, mentally. A rider can do that job without the pressure of having to perform and have others support you and work for you. And often the test of a rider is when they're given that opportunity, how do they respond to it?
Absolutely bang on. Being physically able is one thing, and being mentally able is quite another. And we had 6 riders in the Lotto Belgian Tour. There was a time trial, and Abby Mae was our fastest rider. You know, she was only 22 weeks ago. So I think she demonstrated very clearly to me that she has the mental toughness to take leadership responsibilities next year.
Now, Bob and Tom, it's nice to know, Orla, that we're so influential in the world of women's cycling now, a year or so into the cycling podcast Femina. Last month, we did a feature on female sports directors. We interviewed a couple of them. And lo and behold, within days of that feature airing, Drops announced that they had a sports director, obviously inspired by our discussion on the podcast.
Yeah, we're very proud that Lauren Rowney's joined us. She's based in Belgium, not far from our service course, so she'll be a welcome addition around the service course. She'll be having a split role. She'll be doing DSing and also helping Tom with the media programme that we do. But I know we have a laugh and a joke and we're a fun team, but we do take this quite seriously. We had a female mechanic on the Amgen Tour of California, Kelly, come to us through the Trek programme there, which was absolutely fantastic. We've had a female assistant DS, Katie Colclough, actually at that race, and in the Tour of California and the Tour of Yorkshire, also the Tour of the Wolds UK races. And we've always had female soigneurs, which we think is really important. It's always been our hope that we would have a complete female staff at a race, and I think that that's becoming closer and closer. In fact, we had 50% in Tour of California last year. So yeah, Lauren would be a great addition. She's very enthusiastic for what we're doing. She's followed us all season. She actually gave us a helping hand after one of our early races. She was up in Drenthe, where Tom was DSing, and we had a bit of a logistical problem, and Lauren drove one of the team cars back to Danesa to our service course. So yeah, we're all really excited and looking forward to working with Lauren next year. She'll kick off with us in Australia in January.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by RAFA, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Thank you very much to our main sponsor, RAFA, for sponsoring Cycling Podcast and the Cycling Podcast Femina. Very grateful indeed to them for their support. And I'm very grateful to them also for their jacket that I'm wearing, protecting me from the elements here in central London, the wind, the rain. All you guys look like you're shivering in cold.
We're just hardier souls than
nice
you, Richard.
Snug in my jacket.
Like an underpass in Croydon.
It's kind of like an underpass. Well, that's where we first met, Bob.
A long time ago.
I'm glad you referenced that, because that sounded decidedly dodgy.
Bob and I met in an underpass in Croydon. Anyway, actually, Bob, you, as we took a little pause there, you had an interesting observation, thought about the Mark Cavendish interview that we heard at the start of the last section and the discussion that we had around that.
Yeah, generational is the word that I kind of picked up on. And I think the younger generation, they don't really give any attention to it because they think it's normal. And it is normal. And it's my generation and the older generations that need to adapt. And we're certainly trying to adapt. And we're certainly trying to, bring change to the sport. I think one of the things that we were talking about that you asked me to elaborate on, and that was that we have quite a few of our riders, and they're riders in other teams that are dating male pros. And I think that there is a much larger awareness of women's racing in the male peloton than you might think. And they don't need to make a song and dance about it. You know, they just enjoy it for what it is.
I was going to use the term cross-pollination, but that's probably not appropriate.
But
there are a lot of relationships between young male. You mentioned Theo Gegenhart and Hannah Barnes, and too many to mention, especially around Girona, actually, that hub where a lot of male and female riders are based. An awful lot of relationships between the young male and young female riders.
And it may be that they are as vocal. I mean, we mentioned between us, Theo is one of the riders. He is very vocal on social media, but it may be that the others who are vocal haven't necessarily come to our attention yet, because they are still young and they are still possibly unproven in the ranks. And by the time they get to the level of Mark Cavendish, they will have been tweeting, commenting on women's racing.
I think Theo tweets more about women's racing than men's racing. I mean, he's very supportive of Hannah Barnes, but also of Alice, her sister. I think he's taken her motor pacing and things like that.
Yeah, I saw the motor pacing tweet. Absolutely, yeah. And he's a gooner, is Theo. Teo is a gooner.
We keep football out the podcast, Bob. I don't know if you got that memo, but no space for football in the podcast. Now listen, we're going to hear in this final part an interview with one of the most promising young riders in the world, Danish rider, 22 years old I think she is now, Cecilie Uttrup Ludvig. Now, she says her name a lot better than that, not surprisingly. We'll hear exactly how she says it at the start of this interview. I spoke to her recently in London. She was over with her team, Cervelo Bigla, and she had an outstanding season. Bob, I know you've got some things to say about her and the season that she's had. We'll hear from you afterwards, but here she is now.
So my name is Cecilia Utrobrudvik, and I'm 21. It has been a really great season, both for myself, but also for the team, I think, in general. I mean, starting by Strade Bianche and also Valencia was some really, you know, surprising races for myself. And and it just continued. And I think it has been because of many things, but mostly also because I trained really a lot this winter, going a lot to Spain, both Mallorca and Gran Canaria, which has been really helpful. And it's nice to see it pay off or paying off. I think I really got inspired, and I'm really learning a lot from the team, both from Thomas Campana, our sports director, who really has a lot to give and is very experienced, but also from experienced riders like Ashley or like Lotta, who also have a lot to give, and where I can learn a lot from them.
Can you tell me how you began cycling, how you got into the sport?
Well, it's actually a little funny story. So I was a swimmer before. Yeah, I got sick every time I was in the water, and we went to the doctor many times, and it wasn't because I was allergic to the water, but we couldn't really find out. And then, yeah, stopped with that, and I tried, I think you can mention, you can't mention any sport that I didn't try, but nothing really catched me. And then suddenly our local newspaper had an article about our local cycling club, who had 90 years birthday, and they invited people to come down and visit, and yeah, just to hear a little about the cycling club. And then I thought, yeah, why not? And ever since I've been cycling, and I think it's also been because they welcomed me so good. And a good example was that I was when my bike was I had mechanical problems. Like they had an evening every week, and I went down there, and you know, six men would be standing there and trying to fix it all at once. You know, I was just like overwhelmed by this. And maybe also because I was the only female cyclist in the cycling club. But yeah, in general, I think...
What age were you then?
I think I was about 12, 13. Yeah, around 13 maybe, yeah.
So you were only a girl at the time. Were there others as you sort of started to race and so on? Are there a lot of other girls racing in Denmark?
No, unfortunately not. And I also think that's why that cycling never got to my attention, because yeah, not many female cyclists. It's unfortunately also in general a men's sport or a boy's sport, which is unfortunate, because I think women can cycle as much as men can, and that's also really something that that I've been struggling with in my younger years, because we were, you know, in such a small peloton, and I didn't really how to positioning, and I wasn't that getting that used to that, because we were so few Danish riders in the peloton, and I wasn't racing that much on international level when I was getting to the juniors, and actually mostly as my first year as an elite rider, and riding in these big pelotons with over 100 riders, so was a bit shocked, because I wasn't used to that in the same way.
You had success as a junior rider though, didn't you?
Yeah, which was also a kind of a surprise. Yeah, my first year as a junior, I got second in the time trial.
That's world time trial.
Yeah, in the worlds.
Second in the world championships. Was that a surprise to you? Was that a shock to you?
Yeah, it was, because I didn't really raced on international level before, so I didn't, you know what to expect, and to then suddenly, you know, got a world medal a very big surprise, and very pleasant surprise, of course.
Did that make you think, you know, that you could have a future and a career in the sport?
Yeah, I think that was where I started dreaming about having a professional career. I've been a full-time cyclist for 2 years, but last year I didn't get a salary, so I was riding for free. So it has been something new and to ride and with salary, which also makes a big difference.
I'll bet. And how have your family, I mean, are they very supportive of you in pursuing your dreams? Do you still live at home just now? And have they been supportive as you sort of pursue this professional career?
Oh yeah, I couldn't have done it without my family, and I Also, you know, when I was a junior, riding also under 16, starting, I mean, the support that I got from them is priceless. They were with me at bicycle races and waking up at sometimes 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to help me with the food also, and yeah, just to go with me to bike races. And also, they have also been a great support financially, because, yeah, I live at home now.
So that was Cecilie Uttrup Ludvig, 22 years old. I know, yeah, you may well laugh at that pronunciation.
Cecile to her friends, Richard.
Cecilie, isn't she?
Sorry.
I got into trouble on Twitter for correcting you. Correcting me incorrectly. Last podcast. I'm not going to do it anymore.
Love it when that happens.
Love Twitter.
She's had a fantastic year, hasn't she? She won down in Valenciana at the start of the year where you had a team there. And really, she kicked on from there and pretty much held that young rider's jersey the whole time. She was ninth at Strada Bianchi. I believe she took it.
Strada Bianchi, she did incredibly well. It was a very tough bike race, and that was a standout result for me.
And she's more of a climber, really, isn't she? I mean, she's very slightly built. She looks like a climber.
She hasn't got too much of a kick at the finish.
Good time for Alice as well.
Alice put her away most of the time, but Alice didn't do the full programme. But yeah, she's incredibly talented. Already one of the best bike riders in the world. And it seems a bit churlish. We talk about what she's not good at when she's really good.
She's top 10 Liège, Bastogne Liège, and the women's chair.
And a very bright sort of personality as well. Interesting to talk to her. And no doubt a great prospect for the future. You had an interesting little stat about her
well,
season,
yeah, because she almost lost the young riders' jersey at Gent-Wevelgem because Cervelo Bigla, her team, have never had a World Tour jersey to defend. So Cervelo Bigla didn't realise that they were supposed to provide the jersey. They thought the UCI provided the jersey, so she turned up to Gent-Wevelgem and had no young riders' jersey to wear, the light blue, and so almost had her points taken off her, or points deducted, and would have then not been the leader anymore in that categorisation. Category.
That's the word.
It would have been absolutely absurd and very, very unfair. So she got a warning in the end and kept the jersey.
Well, well, well. Bob, you'll not make that mistake next year when you turn up with Abby May Parkinson in the leading the Women's World Tour. You'll not make the mistake of not having the jersey.
We've got a whole array of World Tour jerseys at the ready, Richard.
Well, you know, you're certainly a team that has quite a few promising young riders. You've developed Alice Barnes extremely well. She's moving on to Canyon SRAM next year, but she's really kind of flourished in your program. Who's coming through? I mean, who should we be looking out for next year and beyond?
We've given 6 of our young riders 2-year contracts for next year, which we're very proud of. 2-year contracts are a little unusual, but we're keen to give our girls security. So Abby May Parkinson, we've spoken about. We were talking about Abby Van Twisk, who's obviously a favourite of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast. Yeah, is that a special membership rate, is it? Or?
Well, just people we like.
Well, she was on the first
people from,
ever
yeah,
podcast
people from,
Femina.
Underpasses in Croydon.
No, well, we did an interview with her in her father's florist in Pimlico on the first ever cycling podcast Femina.
Do you want a scoop? You wanted a scoop?
Yeah, we do.
Randall Van Twisk, Abby's father, has just bought his first bike, and it's a single free, I believe.
Oh, I saw that on Instagram.
Absolutely.
She put a little boomerang up.
61
that's quite
years
cool.
old.
I'm not sure. Yeah, so that's great.
A scoop.
I'm not sure that's the sort of scoop we had in mind.
You were wanting more for your money.
Fantastic.
What was my fee?
Sweet rather than a scoop.
But anyway, these other young riders that you've got, and you're an international team now. You know, you've got brought in quite a few international riders this year. Is that something you continue next year?
Yes, it is. We've signed Taylor Wiles. You may have seen that this week, which is very exciting for all of us concerned. Taylor's moving to Girona next year, and we think she'll be a great role model for the girls. Yeah, we're really excited about that. We've also got Eva Berman, which I flippantly mentioned as being the Dutch Alice Barnes, which I think I'll probably live to regret, because she's going to be the original Eva Berman. This is a rider that Tom initially sort of spotted, having great results, and we've been following her all year. She's a very bright, bubbly personality that's always got a smile on her face, who I think will fit really comfortably into our group. We were talking about young riders on two-year contracts. How did we get off of that one?
Oh, no, sorry, carry on. You said that you put six young British riders on two-year contracts?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's Abby May Parkinson, Lizzie Holden, Lucy Shaw, Abigail Van Twisk, Annesley Park, and was that six? I think it was five. Anna Christian. How could we forget Anna?
No, that's great news, and it's another very positive step. I was going to ask then, Tom, I mean, how do you spot talent? I mean, results are one thing, but as we talked about earlier, with a rider like Abby May Parkinson, for example, who had a support role for a lot of the year, what are you looking for? Are you, you know, going to races, watching races, looking at what riders are doing in races? You know, you're looking beyond the results, I presume. So what are you looking for?
Yeah, beyond the results only tell kind of half the story. You see at races how they ride, whether they're riding for a leader, or we especially look at how they're off the bike, and their personality, and if they fit within the team. We have a very close knit of young British girls that when they're not working, they have fun, they enjoy themselves. And that comes across, and other teams notice that. But they also know when to work and when it's race time, and they also knuckle down and work hard and keep focused when they need to. So it's been quite challenging, I think is the word, is to integrate other cultures and other nationalities into the team this year. Being completely honest, it was a lot harder than I expected, I think, even from the first training camp. Particularly with Eva, she's very bright, very bubbly, and Bob noticed that as soon as he met her and spoke to her on the phone. I think she has a nickname. I'm going to say this right. There's a Dutch nickname. I think it's Decliner Racket. I don't think I've said that right. But
do you know what it means?
You wouldn't be the first person to get something wrong on the podcast. I wouldn't worry about that.
I believe it means the pocket rocket. So I particularly know at the end of this year, she did some summer commisses in Holland and was up there in third and fourth place behind Van der Breggen and Chantel Black and Ensing and those type of riders. And she's only young and she's done really well in the point ones and point twos. And I'm really excited to see how she sets up to world tour level and the more extensive program that we can hopefully give her. And she's turning full time, she's stopped working now, so I'm really excited about Eva and what she can do with us next year.
Can I just say, because I mean, I love that you said that it's about personality as well, because that is one thing I really notice about your team and one thing that really stands out. The ones that catch my eye anyway do all seem to be fun, funny, a little bit quirky. Like, I look at them, I follow quite a few of them on Instagram, and I think if I was a little girl, I mean, I've got a little girl, and I think if you are looking up to any athletes, they're the kind of girls I would look up to. They're the kind of girl I would want to be. I think they are fantastic like that. And I think they really bring a sense of the fun and the joy of professional sport that you do not see very often. I think it's really refreshing.
Eve Shinawee on a pre-contract with
always weaning and dealing, Richard.
How young do you look?
She's very good on a balance bike.
Well, to be fair,
she's very fast.
We've not had an application from a man this year, but we've had way over 200 world.
I remember last year you had some applications
two guys from
men. Yeah.
If I get you another coffee, can I stick her name down?
Stick her on the long list.
I was going to ask, the team is still emerging, still developing, still growing. And, you know, you have been developing these talents, Alice Barnes, moving on to a bigger team. And there are obviously bigger teams out there. But there are certain riders in the women's peloton who are, you know, proven winners. Annemiek van Vleuten or Ashley Moolman Pasio, Lizzie Deignan, Longo Borghini, we heard from earlier. Would it be an ambition? Do you think it would be a positive thing to go out there and bring one of these sort of big fish into the team as a sort of leader? I'm not saying you don't have big fish in the team, because I can see the way you're looking at me.
We did that this week. Taylor Wiles is a big deal. We're not even 2 years old yet, you know. So our curve has been very steep. We have learned an awful lot this year. Last year we were an amateur team, rocking up to Woburn, getting in a Passat and a minibus, and we went off and we raced 71 days of racing in 10 countries. This year we've paid 16 young women professional contracts a salary from January until the end of September, and we've raced in 12 countries and we've done 72 days of racing. So, yeah, we would love to have one of those standout riders, but you can't have it both ways. You know, we're talking about movie star coming in, we're talking about TV. You know, salaries in the women's peloton are going up this year, which is a good thing. Our budget is very small. We're going to have a bigger budget next year. But, you know, next year is only year three. So, yeah, we're ambitious. We've said we're ambitious. We would like to be in the top five teams in the world in the next 3 years.
And I guess that would be, you'd be making a choice there between having a, a team of however many you'll have next year, all on salaries, all being well supported, or putting maybe a disproportionate amount of your resources into one rider, which is perhaps what you don't want to do.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, it's opened a whole can of worms. So basically, the world rankings are on your top four riders. So your top four riders are your point scorers. So your top four riders are earning more money. That's all well and good. But they can't, you know, the centre forward in a football team, I know you said we can't talk football, they can't score a goal if it hasn't, you know, if they don't get the ball from their right winger. So, you know, the classic sprinter of the team, they can't get the points, they can't get the results if it's not a team effort. So when riders move on to new teams, they take their points with them. So that they retain the value as a bike rider in women's cycling and in guy cycling. But in women's cycling, it's more pronounced. So that adds their value, their salaries are higher, they take the points. And then what happens to the team? They don't get any of the points, so they slip down the world rankings. So there's all these things that you need to consider and that we've learned an awful lot about this year.
Well, no, one thing I was going to ask, though, was that's very ambitious. You're only, as you say, 2 years old and aiming to become top five within the next 3 years. I'm presuming it's slightly limited, increased budget. Where does that go then to fulfil that ambition? Does it go to bigger riders who will take their points with them to your team? Or is it possible to bring the whole team up together without a star rider to that level? And I guess you're making stars of them, essentially.
I think, talking about next year, the infrastructure will be raised when we're talking about getting a bus instead of having our tent that we have. And we want to improve all areas of the team. Of course, give pay rises to all the riders, improve infrastructure. It doesn't cost any more to do the racing because we flew everyone everywhere this year, and roughly that's not going to change. So as the budget goes up, arguably we need bigger name riders that increase exposure for the sponsors, and then it's the chicken and egg, isn't it? And it's all kind of intertwined. So we made good improvements for next year, on and off the bike. 90% of the sponsors have increased their value and retained, so that shows we're doing good things. And
go on then. Two minutes six it took you to mention your first sponsor. you've done very well, but tell us who your sponsors are, because obviously they're yourselves, but who else is sponsoring the team?
I mean, it's a serious point. So Drops is a family business, and we've invested an awful lot of money into the project, which is a passion project, over the last 2 years, and we can't continue to do that. We have the support of many sponsors, high quality sponsors, that are all stepping up next year. I think we have sponsorship retention, as Tom said, of about 90% for next year. So we like to give value to our sponsors, and we do lots of innovative stuff. We already know what our worst case scenario on our budget is going to be next year, and we'll know by the middle of October what the best case scenario is going to be. We mentioned Every Can Counts, a recycling industry project that's funded by the aluminium can industry through a membership program, so they're non-profit making. We entertain some of the guys there in GP Plouay for France, so they're extending this throughout Europe. So that's a good fit for us, and you know, they've been very supportive. Trek have been in from the beginning. I've been working with Trek for 20 years. They've been very supportive. We've got OTE, Continental Tires, you know, the whole range of people, Met Helmets. This is where you always forget one, isn't it? And, you know, then you get an email in the morning saying that you didn't mention them. But, yeah, you know, all of our sponsors, Brother, have been very good for us this year, as they have been with all of the UK cycle sport. So we've engaged with some really good sponsors, and there's a lot of them are stepping up for next year. So that's going to give us a bit more budget to be more competitive. Bear in mind, it was only last year we were bottom of the world rankings with 0 points. We've talked about UCI points and teams. This year we got up to 11th in the World Tour, which is phenomenal. It's really Hollywood. We've slipped back a bit now. I think we're 15. You know, we could go back to zero again. That's the ridiculous thing, obviously. So we're having to have one eye on our transfer dealings. But you don't want to sell your soul to the devil, you know, just get riders because they've got points. They have to fit within the group. They have to fit within our plan, the race program that we want to do. So it's actually been quite a busy, stressful couple of months. We've been talking to lots of riders. You talked about the Bowls Ladies Tour. I actually drove overnight from Eurobike there to sign a rider.
Do a lot of female riders have agents these days, or is it still pretty much the contact directly with the rider?
Pretty much all, but some are. Yeah, you know, it's becoming more prevalent. We've had two conversations with riders' agents this year. So I'm not sure that's a good thing or a bad thing. They would obviously say it's a really good thing because they're protecting riders from terrible team owners wanting to take advantage of young, impressionable riders. But no, I'm jesting. It clearly, it the whole sport's becoming more professional, and that's one area.
Well, I guess it that's, if nothing else, it's a sign that there's more money in it. If there are agents sniffing around.
Imagine if they're doing the job properly, they help to generate more money at least.
Well, there's that as well. Yep. There are various ways of looking at it, but it's a sign that the sport is becoming more professional, and the women are becoming more professional, and that's a good thing. We should wrap things up.
The racing is becoming more professional. The penultimate stage of the Lotto Belgian Tour last week, the brakes up to 300 metres to go. You know, that's quite unusual in a women's race. That's pretty cool. You know, we watch the men's racing on TV. Will the brake stick? Will it not?
Are you saying it's going to become as formulaic as men's race? No, Tom is shaking his head. I was trying to wrap things up, and I was going to say that we will be joined again by Bob in next month's episode, so we don't want to use up all his good stuff now. Bob and Tom, in fact, are going to join us. We're going to have a look at the sponsors involved in women's cycling and how that all work. So we'll
I don't think we could
again.
Ever use up all our good
no,
stuff.
We'll hear again.
Pearls of wisdom
next month.
But not even had a beer.
Like sweeties.
We've enjoyed certainly on the podcast Femina following the drop story from the start. It's been really interesting, and long may it continue. And good luck with the signings over the winter and next season.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for all your support. It does make a big difference, and we're just really enthusiastic about what we do, and I think people engage with that, and we're trying to do good stuff.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us on the podcast, Bob and Tom.
Thank
you very much
for having me.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, good to meet you. And I'm glad that Bob let you out of the office for the afternoon.
Back in the cage tonight.
And Bob, thank you.
This is very unfair.
Thank you, Orla.
Thank you very much indeed.
And finally, just as I pressed the off button there, Orla reminded me that we hadn't looked ahead to the World Championships. I mean, there's a bit of uncertainty about the course, how hard it's going to be. We heard right at the start of the podcast, Lisa Longoborghini saying that the Italian team at the Worlds would be perhaps working for Giorgia Bronzini, thinking that it might be a group of 15, maybe even as many as 20 riders. So quite selective, but not hugely selective. And a finisher like her could be a potential winner on that course. Bob, you're going. Who's your pick?
Lizzie Dynan would have been favourite. Come on, let's be
honest. Yeah, okay.
We've talked about Plouay, how strong she was in Plouay, and it's obviously hugely disappointing that she's had a setback. How much of a setback is that going to be? We'll know, won't we, in 10 days' time. Sometimes a bit of enforced rest can be a good thing, freshen a rider up. The British team are looking very strong. We've got some good quality bike riders. But really, are we anyone going to back against the Dutch?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, with Lizzie Deignan, you would certainly fancy her chances ordinarily if she was fully fit. We wait to see. The team around her, they've been building really since last year's Worlds. And I remember her saying just how much encouragement she took from their performance last year at the World Championships and how she really felt that they would be ready for Bergen. But so that's what she's got going for her. What she has against her, of course, is the entire Netherlands team. And they are going to be so difficult to beat because we know Anna van der Breggen is in form, for example. It is a course that should suit her. It depends, as we mentioned earlier, just how things will work amongst that team. Annemiek van Vleuten would ordinarily be in with a fantastic shout herself. Will they work for each other? Will one of them work for the other? Will there be split loyalties there? That's going to be fascinating. But, I mean, van der Breggen for me has just been on. I get goosebumps even thinking about her performances this year. And when we saw her at the Ardennes week, I mean, winning solo on each one of those races, that is going to just take some beating. I'd love to see Anna van der Breggen against Lizzie Deignan, teammates working, Lizzie working so much for Anna this season. It'd be lovely to see those two against each other in the run, and I'd love that.
Tom, who's your pick?
Corey Rivera.
I was going to say her.
I think
that's not fair. I should have gone to me first.
if only we had someone who could have gone to you first, Richard.
I think she's really impressed on some of the hilly races this year. I think back to California, she's in the climbing with the front group. And I think if the Italians are playing it for Bronzini, then I think the Americans can play it for Corinne. And she showed that she's in form at the Dutch, Lotto Belgian Tour last week. So
I think she's might be considered an outsider. I'm not sure. But,
okay, Lotta Lepisto. That's going to be my pick.
That's only because you left her off the podcast.
I think it's
this
Lepisto,
time last year.
Yeah, she was third last year. She was third last year.
And you had to get her in.
But she's a good sprinter, isn't she? She's been in decent form, and if she is there, if Corn Rivera is there as well, she could be hard to beat in that group. Yeah, it'll be an interesting race. These ones are always interesting. Well, the World Championships are, you know, on courses that we don't know. It's always difficult to call, isn't it?
And it's different teams as well. That's what I love. You know, everyone outside of their comfort zone to a certain extent and going in with their nations rather than their trade teams. So I love seeing how that all plays out in the road. I think Anna van der Breggen is going to add to her incredible palmaris.
Okay, that's so there we have it.
Lizzie Dynan.
All our predictions there. Hold us to them and we'll speak to you next month.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.